on Breaker One, this is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on, because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark. Live. The weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and the dwarf from the Warhammer 40k and Age of Sigmar worlds. Don't miss the live show on Thursdays. But for now, you got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Fellas, what do you hear? What do you say?
You misabused terrain. You're an idiot.
That's right, man. That is one of the topics. And I got to tell you, man, you're back and just full of piss and vinegar, man. You're ready to start that fist fight in the convent here, aren't you?
Well, I had to get some work done last week I wasn't aware about.
And I got to tell you, Gary, we're all very happy that you're back.
And that is the last time I use your family doctor, by the way.
Well, I didn't know that he was Lithuanian. Very, very big hands. I mean, Steve and Randy were worried sick about you. Steve, are you all right? I know that Randy couldn't even be on the show tonight. He was so upset.
Family doctor? I thought he was a veterinarian.
Hey, wait. I told you he worked with horses only on a few occasions.
Stop.
You weren't supposed to say that in front of Gary. Gary, are you all right, though?
Huh? Oh, still standing up, so we'll see.
I got to tell you, man, we're just
the painkillers to kick in.
Gary, well, just humor him.
We are happy as a pervert with a Playboy to have you back, buddy, honestly, man. So you're going to be talking about missions and terrain, yeah?
Yep, the missions are coming up, and we have terrain, and I think there needs to be a shift in it for various reasons. And as usual, there's going to be validity to what I say, even though half the people listen to us think I'm an idiot, but
no,
I don't know. We'll see.
I don't think that at all, man. I got to tell you, man. I
listened to the show last week. You don't have to lie to me.
Oh man, I tell you, I'm crazy about you, man. I wouldn't think about that at all. But I'll tell you what, though, I love when you get on one of these tirades, man, because your points, man, they're laser on, and especially this terrain thing. If I suspect it's going to be what I think it's going to be a damn good one. So good stuff coming up on that. Steve, what do we got, man?
Yeah, we're going to take a little side-by-side comparison of Fire Slayer's Hearthguard as compared to the Phoenix Guard, which are obviously getting their book as of, what, Saturday?
This Saturday, it's going to be everyone's sweaty palms. And let me tell you something. I can shore up your whole conversation right here, Steve. I mean, you know, the Phoenix Guard, man, they're not the greatest of this time or that time, but they're the greatest of all time, man. Those little short pants ain't got nothing on them.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's not like they're completely useless like Nobblers.
Wait a minute. I can't even believe. Did you hear that? You know, let me tell you something about Nobblers, right? This game wouldn't be the game, even in 40K. You know, that's one problem with 40K. There are no Nobblers over there. You hear that, Gary?
You know, I take that back, Pat. You know what I do love about Nobblers?
Here we go. This is going to bother me right now, isn't it? I'm starting to get hives here. What do you got? Great.
They're gone.
They're not gone. You son of a... I can't even believe that. They're not gone. They're the greatest unit in the game. You understand? Nobblers. Greatest unit in the game. But yeah, we're going to be comparing Phoenix Guard and Fire Slayers today. And we got a great guest with us today. We're going to be getting to here in a little bit.
And he's stayed here this long. That's impressive.
That's it, man. That's it. We got an awesome guest. We're really kind of thankful he's been with us. We've been trying to get him on the show here for a little bit. We're going to be introducing him very shortly. Get that one, Steve. Fire Slayer, very shortly. Huh? I worked that in on you.
What we call rapier wit.
Wow. And as always, we got the question of the day and some closing thoughts towards the end of the show. And we got good stuff coming up. But you know, one of the best things about the show is Gary is back. You know, and of course, you know, last week, we all know that he was out having some more medical procedures done, and we're just very happy. Are you? We able to sit down and everything worked out all right there, Gary?
No.
Well, we're happy that you're back, man. We're happy that you're back.
Hey, you Grimdark goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
We're going to get rolling, but as promised, we got a great guest with us here tonight. And our guest joining us tonight is a great guy. He is a local gamer, where you can always find him at the GW store in Orland Park, Illinois. And that's Dave Starshick. Dave, how you doing, buddy? Thanks for joining us here on Grimdark Live.
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, bud. Absolutely. Now, here you are. You know, you've been a busy guy here lately. You know, we're going to be showing some of your hobby and some of your mini painting here on the show here in a little bit. But that's not actually what you're only here to talk to us about, right? What do you got on your mind?
I think I've been doing the hobby for about 15 years now, and I think I'm like one of the few people in the store that actually paints the most.
Yeah,
painting is like one of the, everyone comes in and just plays.
Yep.
Plays.
And hey, I don't mean to get into the technicalities here, Dave, but you're a little quiet, man. It sounds like you're being a little bashful or talking to us under the covers, man. Can you louden that up a little?
Oh, sure. So, I think it's just people just want to play the game. I think it's a hobby too. You know, you got to play. You got to paint your models and have them look good.
That's it. And from what I understand down there at the GW store, you're one of the few people that actually doesn't eat the paint too. You actually use it to paint your models. And
no,
the glue.
What? I'm supposed to eat that?
No, Gary. I thought
that those aren't flavors that they're called.
No, Gary. I told you before. Don't eat the green ones. They're not ripe yet. I mean, Steve, didn't we just talk to Gary about this last week?
Yeah, you're like Bob Hope's younger brother. No Hope.
I'm gonna need a flow chart next week. All right.
That's
why he plays Gloom Sprite, because he eats the mushrooms.
Dave, come on, man. I don't need you jumping in with these goons here and picking on me here, all right? You're supposed to defend
Why not?
Me.
Why not?
Pat, if you're the only one getting picked on, think about that for a minute. Maybe there's a reason.
Mob rules, you bunch of bastards, and me and the knobbers are gonna take care of you. But no, honestly, Dave, apart from these two inconsiderate bastards, I got to tell you, man, we've spoken for a while now and getting you on the show, and it's I'm really glad, we're all very glad that you can finally make it. And so, Dave, you know, this guy, folks, for everyone listening, Dave here on the show, he's one of the many Grimdark goons out there in Dice Land. And Dave, I got to tell you, man, are you excited to be here so far, listening to these guys even, you know, bashing on me a little bit?
I've been waiting to do it myself.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Dave, we knew we were going to like you.
Dave, I got to ask you this, man. Did nobody you really care about is listening to the show right now, are they?
I do.
Anybody that you want a long-standing relationship with? Is, you know, just checking, because this show sometimes can be a little bit like a prostate exam in the playground for some of our guests, you know. So, you know, all joking aside, though, Grimdark Live is really happy to have Dave on the show, and is one of the many that make up the heart and soul of this community. And in all reality, Dave, you're a great example of who to be in the community and not what to be. You know, as a side note here, you know, I know a lot of hacks in the communities, you know, strut around like they're the Pope of CrazyCon 6000 and that everyone needs to kiss their dice. But not Dave, folks. I got to tell you, man, Dave is always, you know, chugging along. He's a real great part of the community. And you know, he's always there, man, you know, getting his models together, always good for a laugh or a joke at the store. And you're really a staple in that store down there. But and we're just really excited to have you on the show. So, Dave, how about that, man? How's that for an intro? Did I pull you over to my side so these bastards don't keep clobbering me?
I'll think about it.
Dave, if you keep calling me bastards, you're going to have me at your house.
All right. So, but you know, I got to tell you, man, we kind of touched on a little bit last week. You know, we're, you know, as everyone knows, we kind of hold up the standard here as far as the social contract. You know, we're the show for the common guy, right, Steve?
Absolutely. And Dave actually represents that. He is probably what I would call Mr. Orland Park.
That's it. So, Dave, we're going to be getting back to here in just a minute, and we're going to jump into the news here, because I know that that we got a lot to get at today. So, first part of the news is we got Games Workshop and Marvel Comics is going to be teaming up. We know that Games Workshop and Marvel are collaborating to create some Warhammer comics, and I guess the first ones are going to be out due sometime in autumn of 2020. They're speculating late September, and they're going to spearhead it with a 40K comic book line. Gary, you're going to be sitting buck naked down on that one, man. You're going to be reading that whole thing, aren't you? That's all you.
I'm always buck naked. So I don't understand the statement.
There you go. So that's going to be coming out. And, you know, I thought that kind of interesting as far as, and I don't know what you guys think about it, but I mean, the collaboration, here's Games Workshop, here's Marvel. You know, we looked at last week they got this Bandai, 40K model that's going to be coming out, or action figure, I guess is the best way to put it. And Steve, you put it real well when you said it was a fiduciary responsibility to do this. But, you know, Gary, yeah. let me throw it back at you since you weren't here. What are your thoughts on, when you hear something like this, Marvel and 40K and what are your, or even I should say GW in general, but even though the speculation is that they're going to be coming out with a 40K line first. Comic books.
I'm happy and torn at the same time because I think a lot of the thing that makes the game what it is, it hasn't been entirely mainstream.
Right.
When you do make it mainstream, are you going to get away from what the background and the lore of all of it is and just go to sell mode? And that's what I'm more afraid of. Because if I want to do that, I would just go play Magic or do some sort of competitive video game instead.
Yeah. And Gary, I think that is what the danger is. We talked about that last week about how we knew that GW had to expand. Like, as I put it last week, they have a fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah, I listened to the show, and I completely agree with what it is that you said. So,
and I think that that therein lies the danger, because it's no longer about what the fans and the hobbyists and the people who built this hobby love. It is now what the shareholders feel will make the most money for that stock, and that's dangerous.
For an analogy for this would be, I hope that they use the ladder when they go into the pool instead of diving board.
Yeah.
So they go in slowly instead of jumping in.
And I think that's what a lot of people are worried about as far as, they've seen what has happened. A lot of the hardcore Marvel fans, let's just say, have seen what's happened to some of their heroes, if you will. And I thought Marvel pretty successful, but I can hear some of the griping kind of already coming up to the surface a little bit. Dave, what do you think about this Games Workshop and Marvel Comics team up?
I think it's going to be, I hope it's more of a Space Marine comic than like a Marvel.
I think obviously that's kind of what they're going for. What I think is interesting is I wonder, and this is just me speculating here, folks, is just, me just kind of rolling some stuff around in that weird ass head of mine. But what I'm thinking is I think they're trying to take advantage of kind of the hot dumpster fire recently that Star Wars has been, the whole sci-fi, because let's face it, sci-fi sells. It's a great market. I mean, I love the lore and the background of what 40K is, even though I play like an idiot, but I love it. And I wonder if the powers that be, if one of their motivations, and Gary, I want to hear your point on this too, maybe, is do you think that they're looking at blood in the water with the hot dumpster fire that is Star Wars and kind of the faltering of what the recent Star Trek movies and things of that have been? Do you think they want to try to get into the whole, sci-fi realm? Maybe, I mean, there's rumors out there that they're planning a movie.
I don't know that's the intent of it. I don't think they're looking at that big of a picture. I think you're just looking at an opportunity to basically get out of being a niche and going into more mainstream, to be honest. Now, if they ever get their stuff together and produce a quality RTS game similar to StarCraft II and actually come out with a very good movie, basically, I've looked at it. If there was a movie of any 40K game I've ever played, I would watch it over and over again.
Yeah,
I agree. A great movie. So if they're going to go that route, I just hope they do it right and don't cut any corners.
Yeah, and I'm gonna kind of give some props out right now. There was a guy on YouTube, and he took the book Hell's, the audio book Hell's Reach, or Hell's, was it Hell's Reach, or am I saying that right?
Hell's Reach.
Yeah, Hell's Reach, and he put that to an animated show, animated, I guess, artwork. Dave, do you know which one I'm talking about?
No.
Well, This guy, I got to tell you how easy I think this would sell. The artwork is kind of choppy in it, and it's not. Let me see if I can pull it up so I can show everyone what I'm talking about, since I'm kind of stuttering on like an idiot here. But it's this guy right here. Now I won't play the whole thing, obviously, because it you know, but this guy put this video up here. I don't know if you guys. I'm showing it right here. So basically this guy basically took this type of animation here and he put it to the audio book for Hell's Reach. Now I'll play it right. I'll play a little bit of it right
is
now.
What is asked of me.
Grimaldus.
High Marshal Helbrecht intoned. His voice was a guttural rumble, rendered harsh from yelling orders and battle cries in 100 wars on 100 worlds.
And you can see that something like this is pretty popular. I mean, this video right here, this is the first one, and it's got 730,000 views, and it was published on February 8th, 2018. So I can only imagine what the hysteria is going to be if they actually come out with a full-blown movie. You know what I mean, Gary?
Yeah, but they've threatened that before with movies. And have yet to see one. The best one that I've ever seen, and I don't know how he doesn't work for them, is the guy who did the Paladin video. I can't remember the name of it, but it's unbelievable.
Oh, I've seen that one.
Yeah. It's incredible. I don't know how he doesn't work for them. How they immediately go, hey, you're hired to be a graphic artist. We want you to do one short movie every quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, but I, you know, but I digress here, guys. I know that I kind of wrung this out like an old bar rag here, you know, this topic here as far as Games Workshop and Marvel teaming up. But and folks, you know, we haven't got any more details that we can share right now. The stuff that we just kind of talked about was a little bit of a speculation, maybe a little bit of a hope and a worry here. But we'd like to imagine that even as we speak, some super cool clandestine meetings are being conducted in a hidden lair somewhere. But rest assured, as soon as there's more information, we'll bring it to you. Right here on Grimdark Live and let you know. So, but that's part of the news. Gary, you said you had some stuff you wanted to jump on as far as the news.
Well, Psychic Awakening has been something that they're putting out every week. And the first one coming out is something called Phoenix Rising. If you've been following it, basically every week they've put out a new Eldar character, whether it be Dark Eldar, regular Eldar, and then gave them whatever their specified rules is. I think that that's going to be more and more that you see of it, more impact that it has on the game. Because they said it's supposed to make the 13th Black Crusade look like a small border skirmish. So the news on that I'm looking at is Psychic Awakening is be very close to that and read all the words that are in it, because it's going to give a bunch of hints to what it is that's coming out for. There's also other in 40K news outside of that. Michigan GT is coming up next week. It's 128 players that will be there. And rumor has it that there's going to be something bigger announced there.
Right.
But that could also just be a rumor as well. So, yeah, there's all the Cycling Awakenings they did first, and the update that just came out that wasn't much of an update.
Right.
That's the biggest news. And for the first time in history, in 8th edition, they made no beta changes with this FAQ. None. They put out a statement and said, we believe that the state of the game is where we want it to be. And they went through the big rule book and different codexes and made just clarifications on certain rules.
How did the community take to that news?
Well, now they were all mad because they didn't nerf the stuff they don't like. And I've always been a proponent of, just because you don't like something doesn't mean it needs to be nerfed. What is the impact of it on the game? And
right.
So this
right.
Richard Fiedler won Nova with Tau and essentially had like 40 shield drones. Oh, we got to nerf shield drones. Well, if you take him out of the equation, Tau was 42% win rate at the event. So I think it's the general, not the savior protocol mechanic.
Yeah, right, right.
But a lot of the only thing I think that needed to be addressed was the Eldar flyers, because you can get them to like -3 to hit. They're hard to interact with, yada, yada, yada. But then again, they haven't been winning a lot of everything. You didn't see top 16 were 8 of them were that list, you know, so there's ways around it.
Sure.
They've got counters as well. But they did clarify the things that, and I don't mean to pound my chest here, that I was telling everybody, that's not how that's supposed to work. Oh, well, you don't know that. Well, now we do.
Yeah, now you do.
Gene Stealer Colt's one of the armies that I play with. And if you set up with their special niche, if you will, is to set up blips instead of units. There's a stratagem that lets you, during the movement phase, take 3 units and put them into ongoing reserves as long as you remove 3 blips from the table.
Okay.
His workshop made a mistake was he said units deployed via blip count as being on the table for tactical reserves. So that technically means I don't have, in 40K, you have to bring your units in by turn 3 of their deck.
Sure. Okay.
But the way that was written, I could bring them all in turn 6, those 3 that I pulled off. And I said, that's not what they meant. Well, you don't know that. I said, I do. So I didn't play it that way in the event that I ran Windy City GT. I didn't allow it to be ran that way. I also didn't let the smoke launcher rule be ran the way they're supposed to.
Or okay.
The way people were reading it, because I'm like, no, that's not how it's supposed to be. So they made changes to various codexes and kept basically the same rules and balance and mechanics the same, which all is right. Good.
Well, so yeah, I think that's a very positive step in the right direction, especially for the rules writers of 40K.
Right. Other than what I'll get into on my topic later, which is just people being idiots.
I am excited for that.
And so now they made the changes to the armies that made it like that's not the rule it's intended. Like right now, Marines are the only ones that have something that can come in turn 1 via deep strike on a drop pod. It's called drop pod assault. That's fine. Everybody's screaming about Marines. The last show I was on, what did I say when I started my episode?
Yep.
I said, it'll be okay.
Yep.
Just relax. Exactly. It'll be all right. Marines got really good stuff, and they should have.
I seem to think that you say that often on the show.
Yeah, it'll be okay. It's when people take the rules and go over the top with them, and then it will be in the subject coming up, and they go, well, it's written in the rules, or it doesn't say I can't do that. Yep. Or it's nothing that says I can't come across the table and chokeslam you either, but we're not doing that.
That would be, you know, I think that would be a huge benefit to the game. Steve, you and I just talked about that the other day. I mean, I think that should be part of every tournament, the main table.
There's a lot of extracurriculars involved with that.
That's it. So that's it. That's the other news we got is the Phoenix Rising. But we're gonna keep rolling here. I'm sorry, Gary. Anything else on any other news?
The only thing I'd venture is go into the FAQs and make sure you read all the ones that are updated and you don't get caught with, like, your pants down.
There you go.
You try to do something that's no longer allowed. Looking at you, Gene Stealer Colt players. Chaos.
That never stops anyone. Don't ever let fair play get in the way of a good game.
That's right.
Dave, you said our guest today, Dave, you said you had some stuff you wanted to go through on the news, right?
Well, with the Phoenix Rising, there's Jane Zarr and Drazar are plastic models now.
Uh-huh. Yep. Give us those names one more time, a little louder.
Jane Zarr and Drazar.
Gotcha. All right, and that's a big deal. Now, do you think they're now for a long time? Those are what? Those are pewter, metal?
No, resin.
Resin. Oh, yeah. Well, super glue, right? That cures all resin woes, right?
Yeah, super glue, a mask, and a fan. That's all you need.
Yeah, and a lot of swearing. So, Steve, what about you, man? Anything in the news you want to throw at us?
Well, just waiting for our books. We have obviously the Oryx and the Cities of Sigmar coming this Saturday.
Yep.
So as soon as the stores open, you'll be able to go in, get your books, and I would strongly suggest getting the War Scroll cards.
Mm-hmm.
As Gary has stated in the past, because obviously, I think the Cities of Sigmar has the largest War Scroll pack of any army in the game now.
Yep, it does.
It is gigantic, the size, and I believe it is $25 and not the usual $15.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're getting a lot of cardboard, you know, out of that thing. And you know, if I remember right, there was a review that was done on the Cities of Sigmar book. And I want to say that the War Scrolls themselves go from, I think it go from page 89 to page 127. which is just an obscene amount of War Scrolls. And I'm not talking about anything like the War Scroll Battalions or anything. I'm talking about just where it starts with War Scroll number one, which is probably going to be a free guild on General on a Griffin or something. Free guild General on a Griffin or something. But the whole point is that this is going to be quite the island of misfit toys as far as getting models on the table.
So, well, guess what, Pat?
Uh-oh, what happened?
My son now has technically four Hydras.
You see, he is a brilliant young man.
I bought them for him. Well, that's what I do.
Because you're that now, that right there, that's a loving father right there, man. Now you just got to get, Gavin, we got to get those things on the table, man. If you're listening, we got to get those things going.
He's in the corner playing Batman. He can't hear anything.
There you go. Wait a minute. What the hell is that? What's going on?
And now, it's time for that part of the show where we present the rules from hell.
Yes, that's right, Grimdark Goons. It's time for the rules from hell, where we present the game rules from the past or present of the Warhammer worlds that just sucked.
Here it is, gang, a Warhammer rule from hell. In the first edition of Warhammer Age of Sigmar, Bretonian Grail Knights had a pretty ridiculous rule called the Grail Vow. The Bretonian Knights are dedicated to a quest for a holy goblet. Little do they know, it's just above them in the real world being swung around by a nerd playing a game. In the Grail Vow, you can reroll all failed hit rolls for this unit before rolling the dice if you hold aloft a grail or goblet and shout for the lady in a ridiculous, heroic voice. I gotta tell you, for nothing else other than this, I'm happy this army got squatted. That was definitely a rule from hell.
And now you know a rule from hell.
All right, let's get back to the show. All right, so let's keep it rolling. So as we said about midway through the opening of the show, we have a great guest with us today. We have Dave Starshick. He's joining us today. Dave, how you doing, bud?
I'm good.
You hanging in there? We're not causing you to jump ship on us, man. So I appreciate you for hanging around. So let's get into this. So you know, we've been talking a lot about having you on the show, and we're really happy that you finally made it on, and we're going to talk a little bit about your hobby. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of your experiences in the community and the hobby. So kind of take us down a little bit of a walk down memory lane here. How long you've been in the hobby? How'd you get into the hobby? What are some of your experiences? Just kind of a quick high-low of who Dave is in the community.
I probably started 15 years ago in the mall store before they moved.
Yeah, that was back when Orland Mall had that closet of a store. It was like you know there just wasn't enough air changes per hour in that store. You'd walk in there and it was like crawling into Gungadin's asshole, man. Steve, remember that place? Steve has completely abandoned us, I think.
No, Steve was listening. No, that store, as a matter of fact, to give you a very, very short story about that store. One time we were gaming in there on a Saturday and we noticed that we were all getting sick and getting headaches and we couldn't figure out what it was. And then somebody said, I'll bet there's like literally a lack of oxygen in here. And when we all walked out into the mall by the balcony, everyone started to feel better. And we realized that store, because it was so small and so packed on a Saturday night, it literally was being depleted of oxygen because of the amount of people that were in that store.
And to give everyone an idea of this store itself, this store was maybe 80 feet wide by about 135 feet long. And on any given Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, or Sunday afternoon, you'd have anywhere between 45 to 50 gamers in that store.
Oh, I mean, at least Saturday nights, you'd sometimes, it would be standing room only.
Yeah.
It was so packed.
Yeah. I mean, it was
walking sideways.
Yeah. It was literally, that's no joke. I remember the first time I went in there. Yeah. That store was literally assholes and elbows, man. I mean, if you dropped your dice on the floor, you were getting real personal with about 30 people trying to find it.
What did you just say?
All right, Dave, go before they interrupt us, man. Go ahead, man. Let's
wow.
So you went and gamed at the Closet in Orland Mall. Got it.
Well, I didn't even know what it was. So I just walked. I was walking through the mall and I'm like, "Oh, this store looks awesome." So I went in there and I was like, "Oh, can I see what this is, what this stuff is?" And the manager gave me the test model back, which was back then. I think it was the Orcs and Dwarves.
Oh, so that's Battle for the Past, Dave.
Yeah, that's how old. That's how long ago.
Oh, wow, that's a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, Beastmen were just getting a new book.
Well, that's not that's not as long as, you know, Steve and Gary have been playing in the hobby. You know, it's funny when these guys first got into the hobby, the rule book was only a half a page and just rule one, just bang two rocks together. That's all these two guys had in the beginning.
What are you trying to say? I got an autographed copy of the Bible.
I got to tell you, man, these guys are old. These guys are
old. That's a recipe for the Last Supper. I'm just saying.
You too, man.
All right, Dave. Sorry, these two guys interrupted you, man.
That's okay. I'm used to it.
You're used to somebody apologizing for stuff they did and blaming on somebody else.
Don't mind Gary, Dave. He's still recovering. That, you know, pain meds he's on.
Yeah. No thanks to you.
All right.
So I actually started with Orcs, which is kind of funny now that I'm doing them again.
You're talking about Fantasy Orcs, right? Or you're talking about 40K Fantasy, right?
Fantasy. Night Goblins.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, Fantasy.
And then I just played games once in a while. You know, you remember Rousey?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the manager at the time.
Yeah.
So, and I did painting classes, games. I had 5,000 points of dwarfs at one point.
There you go. And so now, I mean, now, do you get into 40K at all? Are you somebody that games the space age side of it?
Oh, actually, I do have. I've got Astral Claws.
There you go.
Luft Huron is the chapter master, and then they're from the Bat of War. They turn to chaos, and Huron Blackheart. He is the chapter master now of the Red Corsairs.
Okay. That's that's pretty. So you're pretty much now. How many games? I mean, do you? I mean, I know we're going to show your artwork here in a little bit, but I mean, gaming wise, how many games do you get in? I know that you were saying that you wanted to try to get more games under your belt. So how have you been getting any games in? And either AOS or 40K?
Not recently. I'll usually do maybe 5 games a year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not very many, man. You gotta get going on that, man. You gotta get out there. But you have been pretty busy with the painting. You know, I know that you're getting ready for Armies on Parade, right?
Right.
So we're gonna kind of just do a little slideshow here of some of Dave's artwork here. So this is some of the stuff that you've been doing on the show. So kind of walk us through some of the things that that you had to go through just to get this stuff, because you got a lot of stuff done in a fair amount of time. So kind of walk us through, you know, some of your motivations for your hobby motivations as far as how you were able to stay on point and get this stuff done.
Those trolls were from the Gloomspite Gith. I just wanted to do. Actually, it was I wanted a troll army, but I didn't want to do the old ones because they were tiny. Since the new ones came out.
Yeah.
So, like, oh my God, these are so awesome.
So yeah. Those trolls. I mean, Steve, you got, you're playing 2,000 points of trolls, huh?
Yeah. Oh, God, I was just working on them before I came on the show tonight.
Trolls? What's that?
That's a unit, Gary, that takes nobblers and lunch.
Don't encourage him, Gary. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Nobblers would absolutely just steamroll those big goofy bastards, man.
Nobblers. That sounds like a midget strip club I went to when I was in the Navy.
You know, I think I went there with you. I love that place, man. I got to tell you, man. Instead of stripper poles, they had bollards. It was just like only three.
Dave, how in the world is that paint table so clean? It's ridiculous.
I actually paint the models, not the table.
No, I do not. That's not how mine works out. I think my table actually has more paint on it when I'm done than the models do.
So. You know what the interesting thing about Gary is? I one time asked him, you know, I walked over to his house there, and he was making a table candle. And I said, what are you doing there? And he goes, well, this is a real neat table candle. He just poured wax all over a table and set it on fire.
That's right.
It was really neat.
You sure it wasn't at your house?
Well, I brought the table back, yeah, exactly.
He always leaves that part out. So. That's a very, very cool Lord of Change right there.
Yeah, the only problem with Pat, though, is he's got to be back to his house by 5 o'clock every night.
Right, or that thing around his ankle goes off.
I got two of them. They both go crazy, yeah.
What, hands?
There you go. So Dave, let's get into kind of walk us through some of your motivation here. You got a lot of work going on. You got a lot of stuff happening here as far as your hobby. But how do you stay focused? How do you stay away from that brain freeze? I mean, you know, give us kind of some of your motivation here, because you're getting ready for Armies on Parade. Let's talk a little bit about your army here as far as that you're getting ready for.
It's actually one of the guys in the shop, one of the managers, actually brought up the idea to do the Mangler Squig as green for Slimer.
So folks, what he's referring to here is Dave is going to be competing in the Armies on Parade at the GW store in Orland, and he is decided to kind of go with a Ghostbusters theme, right?
Right.
There you go. Good. So there you go, man. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. Let's hear a little bit about
That's okay. So that Slimer, he's going to be the one of the centerpieces. The trolls are going to be on the board. The white one is going to be the Marshmallow Man. The squigs are going to be ghosts. The ghost is going to be just a random ghost.
That ghost is going to be the ghost from the woman and the librarian. When they go into the library, that's who the banshee is.
Yeah, so the librarian ghost.
Looks cool.
And you're referring to the original good Ghostbusters movie, not that abomination that just came out.
Absolutely.
That was terrible.
Yeah. Gary, did you see that one?
No, I did not.
Yeah, he didn't want to waste 2 hours of his life. Yeah.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, it was absolutely horrible. I think I poured bleach in my eyes just to get that out of my head.
That's why you did that? I thought it was just what you did every Tuesday.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Exactly.
Notice the paint pots are nice and clean.
Oh,
the
yeah.
lead plunger cup is nice and clean. I don't even think the glasses I drink out of are that clean.
The paint pots you drink out of, Gary, aren't that clean. I mean, usually, you know, you get a little bit of a, you know, good mix in there before you have a couple of swigs.
I've gotten better. I've put them in a glass instead of straight out of the pot.
A little bit. There you go.
Oh, and if you mix yellow and green, it's now ripe. So
remember, the green ones aren't ripe yet.
They're not like apples. Can't fool me.
There you go. All right, Dave. So what else you got? What else you got happening? So when is the Armies on Parade that's going to be out there at the GW store?
October 19th.
Hey, well, you're right around the corner for that. I mean, that's 16 days out.
Yeah, 2 weeks from Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got. Are you ready for it? You think? I know you got. Look like we're showing some of your early work here, but it looks like you got. You're well on your way to being able to compete with that.
I got one model to do.
There you go. So what, I mean, here's the thing, Dave, you're kind of a no excuses guy. You know, you're a bootstrap guy. You show up every day, you work at it. I mean, it's gotta be a good feeling, right?
Right.
There it is, man. There it is. Good stuff.
Well, you know, I think it goes beyond that too. And if Dave, if you'll indulge me, every time I walk into that store, I see Dave hard at work on one of the models, whatever model it is that he's working on. And what a great ambassador for that store. I mean, like I said, he is Mr. Orland Park to me, because every time I walk in there, Dave is there. He's painting. He's, you know, he talks to people about his painting. He shares tips with people. I mean, I've seen him do it. So, I mean, what a great role model to have for Tim to have in that store to help people with their painting, to show parts of his artwork. I mean, Dave, I got to hand it to you, man. You are Mr. Orland Park.
Yeah, I think the best way to put it, you're like the mascot of Orland Park, man. That's pretty cool.
I'm telling you, he is the man there.
Well, thanks. Good deal. Well, Dave, you're going to be able to hang out with us and kind of, you know, help me, protect myself against these two bastards, right?
Maybe. Can't talk about the Nobblers that way.
You son of a.
No. I'm a troll player. I got to defend the troll.
See?
Nice. All right. Well, good stuff. Well, Dave, I got to tell you, I'm really happy that, that you're on the show today, man. We're going to have a good time. We got a lot to get through, and folks, for everyone just joining us, that's one of the staples of the community right there. A guy that's always down at GW Orland. And that's Dave Starshick. Dave, again, thank you very much for being with us. And you're going to be able to hang out with us for the rest of the show, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good deal, man. Good deal. And honestly, you know, Dave is a solid part of the community, folks. I mean, if you're ever down there in Orland Park and you stop into the GW store there, stop in and say hello to him and check out some of his paint, he'll have a smile for you and a good story about what he's working on, man. He's always chugging along, and he's a real great part of the community. So
yes, he is.
Absolutely,
always,
man.
A good guy.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. But here's another guy that's always chugging along. This guy always is really, I got to tell you, man, he's on top of it. Gary.
What?
Let's hear it, man. You're going to, we got another good one, I think, man. You're going to be talking about some missions and some terrain.
And before I go off the deep end on the universal morons that are running around right now.
Here. Why are we talking about the Nobblers again?
You bastard.
I think it may even be worse than that. So, but here's something I want to say in the beginning, just food for thought. So, as with any hobby or any gaming system, things evolve and change. A couple of haven't, like chess has pretty much stayed the same. Card games have pretty much stayed the same. New ones have came up. But when you're in something like Age of Sigmar, Warhammer 40,000, and missions need to change, terrain needs to change and evolve with the way that the game is. So we've had ITC missions for quite a while. They're fairly static. So
right.
For those of you who don't know, this happens every turn. At the end of your turn, which is a player turn, which is half a battle round, stay with me, right? You check, do you hold an objective? Did you kill something? When I say something, I mean a unit.
Right, I got
and
you.
Then, and you get the bonus. Sometimes the bonus is a extra thing you can do to get extra points. That happens every round. And at the end of the battle round, that would be after both players have had a turn, you check, do I hold more objectives? Did I kill more than my opponent? Okay, that does not change.
Sure.
Then they have a very laundry list of secondaries you can pick out that goes with the army that you have. I won't get into those because I want to get into, if you go six turns, you get a possible 5 points a turn. So after those six turns, you could have 30 points just off of your things that happen every turn. And you can get 12 more points from your secondaries. Right. You get three secondaries worth 4 points apiece, or max it could be 42. So now, when you've had a mission set be out for as long as these have, armies and lists for armies start to develop a certain type to play that mission.
Okay.
I have to kill something. I have to hold something. Right?
So right, those exactly. are
now, if you think about it, that turns things to be pretty static. I know I'm going to generally be able to set on one objective. So I'm going to get hold something.
Sure.
So now I just need to build something that kills more than my opponent. So I can get hold, kill, and kill more. And now I'm only going to give up hold and maybe hold more.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. What we've seen is, when I say we, I'm speaking for others. I'll say what I've seen.
Right.
Because they're, well, don't speak for me or whatever. The way, what I've seen is we go into now a heavy shooting army. A couple of episodes ago, I talked about an army that had a toolbox and a lot of different options, or the army that was just focused on one thing. Well, the army that's focused on one thing generally favors ITC missions. And if that one thing is, I'm a gun line that rerolls shots and have some sort of wound reroll mechanic.
That's in right.
So now I get a line up, blow you away throughout the course of the game, then move out and take things over at the end. And Jim Vessel's list, very much that way. That's what his does. He's not out to table you. It's, I'm going to chip away at you turn after turn after turn because I have a screen. Richard Sigler's Talus, same thing as he has the drones. He's in it for the long game. He even says that.
Yeah.
I'm going to chip away, chip away, chip away, chip away. Then you've got the other ones that are more, I want to do as much damage to you right away.
Yeah, and we covered that pretty well. Right. I think it was like three shows ago, and I think we came to the determination that yeah, the army that focuses pretty much on one thing is more
right. Because if we did the analysis and went through and looked at the list for winning, most of them were not high fail point lists. They
exactly.
did fairly well, and the key was durability. So now mission lists can be kind of set up to where they're fairly static and are not a whole lot of mobility because they're expecting to be able to take away chunks of your opponent's army and then go out and take over objectives as the game goes on. That's how you want an ITC mission. Now, I think it might be time for us to revisit GW missions. Everybody's screaming, oh, this isn't any good. Well, this isn't any good. Well, Games Workshop is not going to make their models in a rule set for ITC missions. They're going to make it for their mission.
Exactly. Yeah, that's yeah.
So
makes sense.
Like Maelstrom, everybody screamed about it because I don't know if you're familiar with the Maelstrom mission for 40K. Are Steve, Pat, are you guys familiar with that?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, I've got a pretty comfort, as far as understanding kind of what they are.
You have to take the cards, right?
Yeah.
Right. So now, when they first came out, I was like, oh, this is too random. There's things in here that I can't even do. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they
folks, for everyone just kind of join, I didn't mean to jump in on you there, buddy, but you know, for everyone listening, Maelstrom war missions are pretty much an alternative to your usual eternal war games that are found. They're a deck of tactical objective cards, basically.
Yeah, they're in the same book. They're in the rule book.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
I try to prove the other ones. So essentially, now imagine you have an ITC list, Richard's list, Jim's list, hell, a lot of lists that I play with. And it's Maelstrom. Well, now you don't know what your objective is every turn.
Exactly.
You have to draw three cards and go, well, shit, I got to get over objective three and objective two, and I have to hold this. Nothing in there said anything about killing anything.
Right.
So now you don't get a point just because you killed something. No, you have to be able to go take things away from your opponent and get them for you. Yeah, you may occasionally flip the ones that you're already controlling, but that's not going to happen all the time. So now it requires a much more in-depth list design than an ITC mission does.
Yeah, but here's the thing that I think is interesting about this, and I don't mean to you know sidecar too much, but I mean not everything like you're saying is going to be the meat grinder scenario. But wouldn't you think? I mean, and it just seems to me that more and more games in 40K, and this is again coming from a limited perspective because I'm really just new at 40K, but it seems like there's a lot more ITC type of builds and games that happen in the community of 40K than there are the standard, I would say, you know, out of the core rule book, you know, scenarios.
Right. So, ETC.
Yeah.
Did I cut you off there?
Right.
Did I cut you off?
No, go right ahead. I'm good. I'm listening. ETC, got it.
So you have ITC, which we're all familiar with here because it's basically in the States, invented by Frontline Gaming, and it was done to make a set tournament style of missions. Mm-hmm. Well, ETC, Europe, they use Maelstrom and Eternal War, like, combined.
Interesting.
So you have an Eternal War, so you have two paths to victory, right?
Yeah.
And they play that way, and I really think it's time for us to maybe set back and visit that. Are you tired of seeing? And now here's where we go into the other one. Here's why. Now terrain plays a bigger issue than it should because of what mission you're playing. Now you basically, if you're playing against the gun line and you're assault army and you have no way of getting to them, you basically want to go second, run out, kill stuff off of objectives so you can get kill and hold more and hold each turn. And then all your stuff dies.
Yeah.
And you have to rinse and repeat. And by turn three or four, you don't have enough left to do it, and they win through attrition.
Right.
I was like, well, what's wrong with that? Well, because that's all you're going to see.
Yeah.
And if it's world to where we have all these different units, all these different cool tricks, all these different things, if you want to compete, you're now limiting yourself to a select few units.
Sure.
Whereas now if you're like, okay, I'm going to play a Maelstrom mission, I need to go get stuff. So now I need to take a bunch of vehicles that I can hide behind a building and run out and grab an objective if I need it. I need to take something that removes people off of objectives and have me go grab it. I have to have things that win in combat because some of Maelstroms are kill something in the fight phase.
Right.
You know? So now it kind of forces your hand on that kind of stuff to go through it. So that's the first part of what I wanted to talk about, and that's the mild part. I think we just need to revisit missions. And I know people are going to scream, I don't like Maelstrom. Well, of course you don't, because you don't get to just sit in your corner and roll dice and go, I win.
Yeah, you know what? And I got to tell you, that's how the fantasy community used to be. You know, and Steve, back me up on this one. Back in the rank and flank days, it was, you know, meet in the middle of the table, beat the crap out of each other, then go out in the parking lot and badmouth everyone. That was the fantasy world back in rank and flank and even early AOS days. And the ETC is a little bit more how things are run, the randomness along with the, I guess, the solidified scenarios. And I would really love to see 40K go in that direction. I honestly right. would. But then again, I'm one of the sickos that loves, you know, the initiative role. You know, I'm in that minority. So I guess.
Problem.
Yeah. I do. I love it. I really do.
So now, you can still get ITC points and do ETC missions. ITC has always been do what you want and you can just report it to us. They never said you have to do this ever. And on that note, segueing into terrain.
Oh, I've been waiting for this one, man.
I have sent some lovely pictures to Pat.
Can I show them now?
But absolutely.
All right, I'm showing the first one right here.
For those of you out there that do this, and you believe that this is what rules intended was.
Here, guys, let me just set this up. I have been waiting to hear Gary's thoughts. When I first saw it, I saw this this morning, and I literally went, I have to hear what Gary has to say. Not more than 3 seconds after I thought that, you posted a comment on that picture.
Right.
Gary, can you explain what the blazes that is?
What is that?
I can't. I'll explain it to you. So since the release of Marines are coming out and the vehicles that are on the screen there, the items on top are called Repulsor Executioners. Okay. So they fire a ton of weapons, and they have the fly keyword. So the fly keyword states a model with fly ignores terrain for all movement purposes. So what these lovely jackasses have done is said, well, I can set these on top of this ruin. They have fly.
You can't shoot them.
You can shoot them. You will never be able to charge them.
Right.
Because, A, the repulsor has a rule on it that says if you go to charge it, you take -2 from your dice roll. And on the picture, whenever you go to look at it, there's nowhere for you to place any models when you go to charge them. and they're like 9 inches in the air. So you need 11 inches to get there, providing you survive the Overwatch. And so once Gary, you was there, this, you can't place anything.
I'm sorry. Is this terrain that this guy brought?
No.
Or is this terrain that he's simply taking advantage of?
He's taking advantage of. You see the other piece of terrain, the one out in the middle with a little piece
yeah,
of
Yeah, I sure do. Yeah.
They will also
yeah, you're
set
referring all, to this one here, folks.
Right. They'll set all three of them on there. On top.
And they think that's fair.
That's correct. Well, it's rules as written. I don't care. You're a fucking moron.
This is why I was waiting for this segment from Gary.
This is the sole issue.
But we have more okay. We have more pictures.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is the sole issue of the game. And the heartburn that causes other people not want to play. A, Marines are great. They've given them a great rule set. And before you switch pitchers, those are Iron Hands. Let me explain it for the people out there that are like, oh, it's not that big a deal. Yes, it is. A, Iron Hands. Their models don't suffer the penalty for moving and shooting. Not like he's going to move it anyway, because he can sit here and see the entire field and blow everything away. So if you keep scrolling out, get a farther view, right? Those are knights across the table.
Yeah, right, right? here, folks, right here.
Yeah, which and right here. They'll pick up a knight or two a turn from the vantage point that they're at. So Iron Hands, the little guy that's standing on the edge, all of those guys right there, all of the repulsors get a 5-up or vulnerable save. And they also have damage done to them reduced by 1. And they also have a 6-up feel no pain. So you're talking about a 16-wound model with a 3-up save at toughness 8 that now reduces damage by 1. Oh, and by the way, if you don't kill it, he will heal 9 hit points, wounds, whatever you want to call it, right back to the model the next turn.
You have to that is the most asinine rule. That's crazy.
Right. Now, with all of that said, I don't have a problem with that. As long as they can't be set up there. Put them on the ground. So now you have to move them and utilize lanes of fire and line of sight actually matters.
Yeah.
That is what turns out. That's
where,
why.
Where was this? I forget now. Where was this picture taken?
I don't know what I was taking out, but I sent you two other ones.
Yep. All right. I'm going to show. Can I show the next one?
The next one, the Necron one with the flying crest. There you go. There's 6 vehicles on top of a train right now that you can't assault.
Good God.
And this is okay. Well, that's the only way we can compete. Well, then get some skill and stop going, well, I'm going to sit up here and you can't engage with me at all.
Is that that's really how, exactly. Is that an actual answer?
Yes.
Aren't those doom scythes?
Those are doom scythes.
They're flyers.
Right. And the things underneath them are doomsday arcs.
Unreal.
And all of them are sitting on top of a rule. There's 3 flyers, doom scythes, and then there's a doomsday arc, and another doomsday arc.
So let's kind of drop down. Let's kind of drop down a couple of gears here and kind of explain again. You know, if we got a couple of people that are just joining us, so. Explain it again, what we're looking at here and what we just saw in the previous picture.
Okay, what you can't see on the bottom of that, it looks like a sky shield landing pad that's been chopped up to be a ruin.
Right here at the bottom.
So JW has a rule that says if you can't place a model onto a level of the ruin, that unit can't be charged. Right. Because you can't fit up there to charge them.
Oh,
This was meant for when you have infantry on a level of ruins and you've spread out a unit of 20 and covered the second level of a ruin so you can't be charged. It wasn't meant for your in repulsor tank with 16 wounds and the fly keyword to set up the entire game and never be charged and be able to shoot at everything you want to and ignore all the line of sight because you're sitting above it.
So obviously what we're talking about, and we got one more picture we're going to show.
Well, the flyers I don't mind so much because they can't stay there. They have to move.
All right, can I show the custodies picture now?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
This is lovely. Look at that. That's some good stuff right there.
I'm just laughing right now because I'm picturing Gary's blood pressure like tripling when he saw these pictures.
No. I have done this. Here's what I did.
Oh.
I was like, that's a dick move. So they put stuff up there. I don't know why, but the table I was at, it just continually got hit. Why is it so quiet?
No, I'm listening. I'm with you.
I think it's so quiet.
So the table gets hit. Guess what? The model falls off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, can I just put the base up there because of the wobbly model?
I misunderstood what you said there. Yeah, so listen, yeah, those things are going to not only fall down and probably break themselves, right, but hit something.
If you have to balance your fucking tanks up there like a house of cards, you know you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, look at that. Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing.
So, Gary, is there any kind of penalty in a 40K tournament, like if you do something stupid like that, and then like the model falls and it damages
something? Hold on. My good friend and buddy, which we've only met like a handful of times at events. His name is Richard Robbins.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he has a rule that is now effective for Michigan GT, and it's lovely. It's called, if it fits, it fits. Vehicles with a fly keyword may only be placed on a level above the ground floor of a ruin if the entire base fits, meaning the entire base with no part of it off the ruin can be legally placed. In the case of models that do not measure distance to and from the base, but use the hull instead, the entire hull of the vehicle must fit. So that won't work.
Yeah, and folks, part of the joke was you know, in the write up today or on the boards where this picture here that I'm showing right here came from, was the statement was, if it fits, it sits. You know, hey Reese, will this work? If it fits, it sits. You know, kind of a thing.
Right. And there's people throwing a bunch of stuff that was on there. Yeah. And here's the thing. And I had a person go, well, you know, they shouldn't use shitty terrain. And then I responded with, well, maybe players shouldn't do shitty things. You know, because you know, if you're any type of gamer or person, that is not right. Well, the rules, it says that I can do it. Okay, if we're going to go that way, you're going to have a very, very long game with me. Because I don't know the rules very well. And as soon as you stop doing something and you forget to do something, I'm not going to let you go back and do it. Ever.
Yeah. Right.
Because of stuff like this. We're playing a cordial game. You're going back and forth. I get it. You know, I don't want to beat somebody because of a massive error they made. I want to beat them because I outplayed them.
So, Gary, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Is there, I don't know if you heard me earlier. Is there a penalty if you do something ridiculous like this and your model falls and damages your opponent's models?
That penalty is probably fist of cuffs in the parking lot.
Is there a consequence?
Not to my knowledge. So typically what people will do, those flyers come off of those bases and they will just put the bases up there without the model on them.
Okay.
That way that doesn't get risked that way. But now... that this has been done this way, we won't have that problem.
Because 40K guys, are like fanatics, especially when they have a well-painted army. And I can't even imagine how psychotic I would be if I had this beautifully painted army and then someone did a move like this and that fell on my models. I would go crazy.
Yeah. Typically, I haven't ran into that yet, but there would be. I would state it, hey, look, I spent a lot of time and a lot of money on the models that are underneath there. If there's any of those that fall off onto my stuff, we're going to have an issue. And outside of damaging your model, it has now disrupted the board state.
Yeah.
And now things are going to get hit and moved and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. But this is something that is now going to be pushed by the wayside.
Yeah. I would say that would have to be, because I'm already just thinking of a ton of different like negative scenarios that could happen at any given tournament.
Here's one of the big issues that I see. I don't run events here anymore. I'm going to run two. I'm going to do two next year. One is going to be for cancer awareness and pure profit, and there's a lot of cool stuff that's going to happen with that one. And the other one's a Windy City GT, which will probably be at Dave and Buster's, and it's going to have very standardized and thought-out terrain that's on there. But I will also have rules for those events. Here's the issue. And for all the local game stores out there that are running 40K events, you can ignore what I'm about to say if you want to, but I would highly recommend you not. Adapt rules that people can't come in and abuse stuff like this, because that's going to keep you from having people show up, because that is ridiculous. That is just a blatant, I'm going to use this to my biggest advantage. Even, I mean, think about, just look at that picture. All the tank, no, the first one, backup one. I know you put it on scroll because you got lazy, right? There you go.
That one. Thank you.
So now the infantry are on the ground floor. You see that, right?
Yep.
All the dudes at the bottom of the white bases.
Yep.
And on the second level of roads. And on the very top is the 8 billion pound tanks.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot. I'm sure but, that structurally that's no problem.
Yeah, there. I mean, it doesn't even make sense what I'm
saying. The only reason the guys are on the bottom is because when you charge a unit, I can't run through your guys. So that unit is unchargeable.
Wow.
It already has the advantage of -2 to charge it, and you're getting shot at like 40 times from one model. I don't want to charge the thing anyway. But you should have to maneuver it in the movement phase. What this does, and if anybody's out there listening and they don't care, and they're like, nope, you're wrong. That's the way that it is. I can do that. Shut up. Because now what you're doing is showing your lack of technical skill and your ability to rule or anything. Because you don't have to move. You don't have to get in line of sight. You don't have to worry about anything on the ground. All you have to do is put models up there and shoot stuff.
Yeah, I mean, all they're going to be doing is rolling dice the entire game. They're not even moving.
You're a goon. Stop it.
Yeah.
That's Dave, crazy. I got to tell you, man, isn't it when Gary gets talking about games, it's like pure poetry. Isn't it great?
It's hilarious.
So, I'm a
good stuff.
If I run an event, this will not be allowed. At Windy City GT, I screwed up because I didn't realize this beforehand. And I had ruins that were actually like the L's in the middle.
Yeah.
The tops were actually thinner than that. I'm talking about half inch pink.
Oh, yeah.
Foam. And people were putting wave serpents on top of them, assassins, shock attack guns. I was like, God damn it. You guys are ruining a good thing. So next year, next time I do it, I will simply state that the third levels and above at the top portion of any runes are impassable to anything with the vehicle keyword.
Okay.
Can't land there, period. What about the second level? Sure. If you can put your tank on that first little level there, that being the second level, because a ground floor, for all of you non-elevator friendly people out there, is the basement. What above it is the first level. Or excuse me, what above it is the second level. Then you have the third. So you can hide your tank on the second level if you want to, but now you can't see anything. That's kind of the point. Tanks being on the ground, you have the fly keyword. It's so you can set here. And everybody's like, oh, then the fly keyword's useless. No, you're an idiot. Again, what the fly keyword means is I don't know if I'm going to go first or second. That individual across from me has 3 knights and has a lot of firepower. I don't want to get shot to death. So you hide them behind those buildings. Fly lets you fly over them and park on the other side and now shoot. So you can take advantage of cover, not have to go around, go directly over it, and be arranged to fire. It wasn't meant for you to park all 3 of your tanks on top of a ruin that's 1/4 inch wide and go, I don't understand what the problem is. If you don't understand what the problem is, sell all your shit and go back to school, because that's where the basic knowledge and concepts of common sense are learned.
Yeah. Wow.
And this goes against common sense. Well, you're talking about a game in common sense. No, I'm not. I'm talking about a person in common sense. The rule book doesn't think on its own. The model doesn't think on its own. Whenever you put them out there, you are now displaying the common sense that you have. Well, I can put those up there. It's completely legal. Well, technically, yes, you're right. But you're probably still not going to win. Because if anybody with any type of a brain that's not playing with knights will just put all their stuff out of line of sight and you have nothing to shoot at the entire game. And we will sit there and stare at each other.
Yeah, I mean, how is that even fun? Like, how is that even an enjoyable game, even for that person?
It's, they don't care. Anything that, not everybody's like this. So I need to do a caveat here. Not everybody does this. This is a hand-select few of people that make it bad for everybody else.
Yeah.
They honestly don't care if they win or not. Their goal is to make you have a shitty time. And if this picture isn't an example of the statement I just made, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I don't understand how anyone would want to pay money to go to a tournament and then do some jackass move like this.
Yeah.
And then think that they're somehow clever.
Right.
You're not clever. You're being asinine.
I would tell any opponent out there, my name is Gary Frank. If we play a game like this and you do this and I offer to buy you a drink, you might want to say no.
Depends on the color.
Right. So
there you go, man. Well, Gary, good. But, and this goes back to the social contract of gaming, right? Don't be a jagoff. Don't do stuff right. like this.
Now, for That's terrain crazy. Going forward, if we come up with, as a community or Games Workshop, if you would love to, it'd be nice because I understand you wanted to make the game smoother. You wanted to make fewer rules and so forth and so on to make it more fluid and go. But inherently doing so, you also take away from things like this to where people legally say they can do this. So you need to make it a little bit more stringent on terrain. I know that chapter approves coming out. You may have already put the books to press. If you have any way, if you haven't already done so, of modifying the terrain rules to stating things like this can't happen, please do so for the betterment of your game and the betterment of the entertainment of your customers. Because this is ridiculous.
Yeah. And this is the kind of stuff right here where, you know, if the rules writers aren't a little bit more particular and careful, you know, and do a better job of reviewing things before they go to publishing, this is the kind of stuff that can actually fracture a community. I don't know if this will ruin a community because 40K is thriving.
Right. I don't think it'll ruin a community because people won't let that fly.
Well, it would certainly set a very poor standard.
Right. Well, here's my question. Here's what needs to happen.
Okay.
This needs to happen on stream at a Games Workshop event in London or wherever they stream theirs from. When they go, where you have Iron Hands today versus Ultramarines to show the new Marines to come out and have one Iron Hands player deploy like this.
Yeah, right.
Right? Yep. And then immediately they're going to be like, okay, well, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. Boy, that was a bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Well, we didn't think that through. No, it's not that you didn't think it through. You wrote good rules. I like them. I was like, no, they didn't. Yes, they did. They wrote good rules. The problem is you didn't take in part of the jackasses like this that are going to take those rules and instead of going by intent, go completely rules as written. Completely. And then go and do something like this.
Solo scriptura, man.
Right. Yeah.
There it is.
So, yeah, you've got something that has to be done about this. Reason Marty did that, and I think he waited for the FAQ to come out to see if they addressed it. As soon as they didn't, bam, this was addressed by him.
Yeah.
And the responses to it were beyond laughable by a handful of people.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I saw some of the stuff on the boards this morning. And
hilarious.
Yeah.
Like one guy, this rule is horrible for my army. Well, maybe you shouldn't have written an army that's dependent on being able to sit on a 2-inch piece of a terrain the entire game, you jackass. So there is that. But with that said, we as tournament organizers of small events, large events, the game store owners, all of those, invest in terrain or make your own terrain. There's tons of it out there. Frag Factory Gaming is a great one to go through. I've been talking to John all week.
Yep. Yeah.
And what I want to do is go, okay, here's the style of terrain that I want. Here's the type of line of sight black and I want. Here's the height that I want. And have that same type of line of sight be done on different pieces of looking terrain. That way you don't have every table that's exactly the same. It looks different, but you still have the same type of line of sight blocking and terrain available to everybody to use. That is what needs to happen. Do that or there's going to be an issue. And I now have I'll call it the studio that's ready for recording to be done out of. And I'm going to invest in a set of terrain and a mat that's from Pro Tabletop that's doing the $10,000 tournament in December. Because I think their terrain layout is the absolute best. And their mats, they have designed to where the pictures on the mats is where the terrain sits. So if a piece of terrain gets bumped, you know exactly where it goes. The objective markers, the circles for them are already pre-placed. So you go to the mission, you just put the objective down and you go.
Yeah, I like that.
It's very good. And here's the other trick. This isn't for a fully blown full table of terrain, it's $100. Paint it. Then there's the mid version and the bottom version.
Yeah.
And those would be very good. And that's what I'm talking to Jonathan to try and duplicate. Because they don't have a patent on any of this stuff. But if we can get that put out in Windy City, which is going to be currently at don't hold me to this, but the venue I'm working on is Dave and Buster's in Rosemont.
There you go. Good.
So we'll have that all set up and ready to go, and all the tables will be the same, and we'll be set to go, because I'm interested in wanting one to two great events and then setting a standard for everybody to go. I really love what they did there. Let's make that go through everywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, and folks, more information on that one as it comes up for sure.
Right. For the purists to be out there, though, there's still all kinds of info. There's the friendly, there's the narrative, there's all that with all the cool different style terrain. So you can still keep to the books and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But for match play, the terrain should be not a determining factor of 100% whether somebody wins or loses.
Yeah.
It should be a factor, but it shouldn't be the majority factor. Player skill, movement, hiding, tactic should be the main tactic.
Yep.
And stacking all of your shit on top of a 3-inch ruin is not a tactic.
You are not kidding. Well, good stuff, Gary. Welcome back, dude. I'm really glad that that you're back, man.
But me too. We'll see how it goes next week.
You got it. So, Steve, moving on, man. Moving on, Dave. What do you think of that, man? Is that not Gary Frank? Is that not Gary Frank? Didn't we tell you about that?
That's the hardest show.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Well, we got another body part coming up as the other part of the show. Oh, Steve, did you hear that?
Hold on here. I was just getting a knobbler off the bottom of my shoe. Here.
Bastards.
I have that same problem.
Oh, God, unbelievable. Inconsiderate. Jagbags. All right, so moving on. So here's the thing. So Steve, we're here to talk about how the Phoenix Guard can basically just slap around your little Mohawk midgets, right? Isn't that what we're going to talk about?
You shut your mouth, sir.
We weren't talking about knobblers. We were talking about fire slayers.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Yeah, so let's get into this, man. So Phoenix Guard versus fire slayers.
Can you bring up the Phoenix Guard War Scroll side by side with the Hearthguard Berserkers?
Yeah, give me one sec. I'll go ahead and do that run a little conversation cover for me, man.
Sure, not a problem at all. So I was thinking about these two units that, to me, are almost identical, and profile-wise, they virtually are identical. Their range is the same, 2 inches. Their attacks are the same. Their hits, wounds, 3s by 3s, rend of 1, damage 1 for Phoenix Guard. Now, the only difference being the Hearthguard Berserkers do not have rend, but they have something, in my opinion, that's better, and that's the Flame Strike Poleaxes, which can do 2 mortal wounds on a 6-up.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, it's devastating.
So
okay.
What I have up right now is the Phoenix Guard. Now, you want me to pull up the Fire Slayers?
No, you know what? That'll just complicate it. Why don't you go ahead and zoom that Phoenix Guard in so people can see here.
Okay, here comes greatness, folks.
Control mouse scroll, if you didn't know.
Well, you know, tell you the truth, Pat, you're not lying when you say they're greatness. It just depends. Are they going to be great against the Fire Slayers? When I look at this Phoenix Guard profile, I'm looking at probably one of the most phenomenal infantry units in the game. These guys don't even take battle shots.
And I would say that they're phenomenal for the last 12 years.
Well, they're even better now because they don't even take battle shock tests when they are around a Phoenix Temple hero,
right,
which is huge. Now, if we're going to compare that to the Hearthguard Berserkers, we have the exact same thing almost.
Yeah, and I am going to bring up that because I want everyone to kind of get the full experience of what we're talking about here, because I think this is going to be a good topic. So keep going with the Phoenix Guard.
Okay, so the Witness to Destiny is the game breaker here for these guys. Basically, what Witness to Destiny is that these guys get a 4+ after save, very similar to the Hearthguard Berserkers. Now, I know someone out there who knows Fire Slayers is going to say, well, they don't get a 4+ ward save. They get a 6-up, and they only get a 4-up when they have a hero within 10 inches. Well, I want someone to practically argue with me and say that there's ever going to be a situation where you are not going to have a hero in a Fire Slayer army next to your Hearthguard Berserkers. Because if you do, then you're not playing your Fire Slayers correctly.
Yeah, but I think it's fair to say, though, the Phoenix Guard don't need that. They get Witness to Destiny regardless. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah. So on the ward save, I give the edge to the Phoenix Guard because they get it no matter who is around them. Okay. Now, when I compare these guys to the Hearthguard Berserkers, I'm comparing them to a Hermdar list. which is exactly.
And I'm going to pull up.
I...
Here's the Hearthguard right here, just for.
Okay. So let's take a look at the Hearthguard real quick.
Right.
Okay. So your Hearthguard Berserkers have virtually the exact same stat line as the Phoenix Guard. They're your typical elite threes by threes, two attacks. They do not have a rend of one, but they can get it from an Urgold rune. So they can have the same thing. So when you look at this on the surface, you say, well, wow, the Phoenix Guard seem to be coming out on top as a basic profile. But then we look at the actual information wheel that you have there. And you see that the Phoenix Guard only have one wound, whereas the Hearthguard Berserkers have two. That's where the Hearthguard take over. This unit only has 30 wounds. The Hearthguard Berserkers have virtually the exact same thing, and they have 60 wounds. The Hearthguard Berserkers cause mortal wounds when they have the Flame Strikes. That's huge, because on average, when I play my Fire Slayers, I am getting anywhere between 7 to 8 mortal wound attacks per combat phase. So that's translating to 16 mortal wounds. If I'm going up against Phoenix Guard, they're going to save half of them, just going by the numbers.
So yeah, and what we're talking about here, folks, is the Phoenix Guard have a 4+ normal save by a 4+ ward save.
Correct. So they will not get their normal save because of the mortal wounds. So they're only going to get their 4+ ward, and that's only 50-50. So if I did 14 mortal wounds to them, 7 of them statistically are dying. That's where the Phoenix Guard fall apart very quickly. Because,
yeah, and I think the only thing though, too, though, you got to remember is they're not taking battle shock.
True, but yes, they'll be a tank. They'll literally sit there.
Yeah,
and
meaning the Phoenix Guard are not taking battle shock where, you know.
But just remember, when I say 7 mortal wounds, that is just from the Flame Strike special ability. I'm still on average getting anywhere between 20 to 30 wounds through. And I guarantee you, even with 4s by 4s with the Phoenix Guard, I'm going to kill at least another 5 to 6.
Yeah. And,
so
and
right
and...
away, your unit, your Phoenix Guard are right away dropping down to almost half after one round of combat.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, just from the practical sense that you know, that the Fire Slayers have their own book.
Now, I'm looking at the new Phoenix Guard profile.
Right, out of Cities of Sigmar. Yeah, got it.
Yes, I'm looking at the new profile. So, once again, you have to look at the whole scroll. If the Phoenix Guard charge the Hearthguard Berserkers, they are getting 60. They fight literally the entire unit fights. 60 attacks.
Right.
So
yeah, they got a 2-inch reach, 2 attacks apiece, whereas the Orc Hearthguard have 1 attack apiece at 1-inch.
Well, no, they have 2. They have 2 attacks apiece, but they can only fight in 2 ranks. So if I'm fighting 10 across by 10 across... In other words, you have 10 across, I have 10 across, and we're meeting each other in engagement. I will get 40 attacks. You are getting 60 because you are going to have all 3 ranks fighting. So when if it comes to a situation where you attack first, the most you're probably going to kill out of my army with, assuming that I have the Battlesmith nearby, which he will be, or assuming that I have the Prayer of Ash. So let's just say that the Hearthguard, their normal save, let's just say it's a 4+, because 9 times out of 10 it will be.
Sure, okay.
Even with your rend, you'll drop me back down to a 5. With my 4+ ward save, you're probably going to kill maybe 5 to 6 Hearthguard Berserkers if you're lucky. I still will then have a full 2 ranks to fight you with. So my attacks will not be reduced in any way, shape, or form, even after your first initial engagement. Now, because I play Hermdar, I'm striking first against these Phoenix Guard. And if it's my turn, I'm not only striking first, but then I'm striking a second time because of my battalion.
So here's my question, though. How are you? Let's go back to this real quick. So I'm looking at the attack profile right now of the Hearthguard, and it's showing 1 attack, 3s by 3s, no rend damage, 1. Where is that second attack coming from?
Okay, let me pull this up here.
Let me pull this up.
Yeah, because I'm looking at their war scroll as written. There we go again, Gary, as written. And I'm looking at
okay,
one attack.
Okay, you have the wrong unit up, Pat. You have the Auric Hearthguard.
See? You're going to do it as written. At least have the right as written on the screen.
All right. So, so.
No, it's an honest mistake because they're both called Hearthguard. So go ahead and get out of the Auric Hearthguard and go into Hearthguard Berserkers.
I got you. All right. Here we go. Let's get rid of these stunties right okay. here and let's pull up these guys here.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, folks. I'm with you.
It's okay. It's an honest mistake. They're both called Hearthguard. So these are the
aha. Now, okay. Oh, now I understand. Gotcha.
Now,
all right.
I could also say that the Hearthguard Berserkers have a shooting attack, which is virtually going to be useless against you. I'd be lucky if I even got one kill from you. So I'm not even considering their shooting because it's so god awful.
Yeah, 5x5 is at 8 inches.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. On average, even with the entire unit throwing axes, you might kill
yeah.
two models.
5x5 is 8 inches. That's like describing my foreplay.
I was about to say, only AOS are those bad numbers.
So when we look at the Hearthguard's abilities, when the abilities of the army, you're obviously looking at, especially when you're fighting Hermdar, we're striking first no matter if you charge or not. So the advantage automatically goes to us. Because you're not going to get your full 60 attacks, because if you charge me, I'm striking first, and I'm at least going to kill 10 of your Phoenix Guard.
Right, right. Okay,
all
so,
my
so
attacks.
For everyone just
so right
joining
away,
in, because of my mistake here, for everyone joining in, what Steve and I are doing, and Gary, and what we're all talking about here in Grimdark Live is basically we're comparing Hearthguard Berserkers versus Phoenix Guard. So all right, so go ahead, Steve. Keep going. Sorry
okay.
about that.
No, it's fine. So... right away, the advantage is going to the Hearthguard because now they're dropping you down to 40. Because I'm going to kill at least one rank. And if it's my turn and I charged you, I'm probably going to end up killing another 10. And then we pretty much are saying our goodbyes.
Yeah.
But
okay.
If the Phoenix Guard are charging me, I'm still going to strike first. I'm going to probably wipe out 10. And I'm going to drop you down to an even amount of attacks a piece in that very first combat phase. So when I look at these two units side by side, as amazing as these Phoenix Guard are, and they are amazing for the Cities of Sigmar lists, they're not, in my opinion, going to stand very long against Hearthguard Berserkers. I think the advantage goes to the Fire Slayers for two reasons. Number one, any Fire Slayer player worth their salt is going to be playing Hermdar because they want the strike first. In addition to the fact that the Hearthguard Berserkers have two wounds apiece and the Phoenix Guard only have one. So I'm already double your wounds from the very start of the combat, assuming that they come in at full strength.
Right. Yeah.
So I think the ward save advantage goes to the Phoenix Guard. I think the no battle shock advantage goes to the Phoenix Guard. But when it comes to the actual grind, the Hearthguard Berserkers are going to beat them every time.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean,
what I would like is for you to offer your opinion since you are a Phoenix Guard player.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I kind of have mixed emotions about this whole thing, and I think everybody here knows my definition of mixed emotions. But you know, I started playing Phoenix Guard back in the rank and plank days, you know. So we're going back to Phoenix Guard for up until I would have to say this edition of AOS have probably been the single most elite unit besides Nobblers on the table through the entire fantasy Warhammer Fantasy 7th edition, 8th edition, AOS 1, AOS now 2, you know, in the game. There wasn't anything or anybody that could touch them, and their stats pretty much, besides the Rend,
have stayed. Yeah,
they've always had a ward save since 7th edition Warhammer Fantasy Battles, and of course, you know, the statistics were different then. But you know, the thing about this army now, you know, I would say that had they updated the High Elves, as they were once called, and brought this army into today's world with all that the High Elves could have done with their magic and everything else, I don't know that the Fire Slayers would do as well as they are. I think in this version and in this instance looking at it, I think the fight would be a little closer than I think you're alluding to, but I definitely would have to, you know, begrudgingly agree that the Hearthguard Berserkers in a unit-to-unit fight would probably edge it out over the Phoenix Guard. Now, all things to the center. I mean, this is still a dice game. But, you know, the Phoenix Guard, the one thing that I've always, you know, can say about them, and I'll kind of, you know, talk and show everyone their War Scroll card, is, you know, they have a lot of things that I think are going to be the backbone of the new Cities of Sigmar army. And I think anybody that doesn't take Phoenix Guard, for a few reasons, you know, you can take Phoenix Guard now as a retinue to protect your general. If you don't do that at the very least, you're kind of a dum-dum. If you don't take a full, you know, Phoenix army,
I would agree.
With Cities of Sigmar, you're kind of a dum-dum. But I think properly supported, now I don't know if the answer is, you know, Hellstorm Rocket Battery. I don't know if it's a steam tank. I don't know what in the Cities of Sigmar book yet that could be, you know, put into this list to kind of help support them. But I think a Phoenix Guard supported unit against Hearthguard Berserkers to soften them up a little bit.
Sure. Would, I mean, yeah, then it's not even, then we're not even doing a comparison.
Well, what I'm saying is right. But what I'm saying is it would take a support unit, almost like the way that I used to play my Lothurn Elf Army. You know, Lothurn Elf Army, I had just a lot of shooting and I would take care of you that way. But yeah, I would say that, you know, even with the two attacks, 3s by 3s, -1 damage, 1 that the Phoenix Guard are getting, their 2-inch reach, even with things like, you know, their you know, Witness to Destiny, and the fact that they're not taking Battle Shock, yeah, they might stick around to the last Phoenix Guard.
Oh, this army is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
For any other army that's not Hearthguard Berserkers. I guarantee you that.
And you know, here's the thing. I don't see... Go ahead.
The sci-fi guy that doesn't know anything about what you're talking about. That's a lie. I've been secretly talking to Steve and planning your demise for about a month now.
Bring it.
No, I will. So wouldn't the new orcs cause problems for...
Yes, the new Drakfoot.
Since they have the ability, I don't remember what it's called, because
it's called
the one where their wounds cannot be, or damage can't be prevented by any means.
Now, here is the thing, and Pat and I, boy, it's odd that you brought that up, Gary, because Pat and I were just talking about this last week.
Yep.
The Drakfoot tribe, whatever they're going to be, battalion, whatever it is, they negate any kind of ward save or after save or feel no pain save, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
So the Phoenix Guard and any other army that has an after save is going to be in big trouble against them.
So I have a question again.
What's that?
I have another question.
Sure.
Gotrek Gunderson, wouldn't make that too? Okay.
He dies in one. If you're playing a Cunning Ruck army,
yeah,
or if you're playing a Drakfoot army with any amount of archers, and I mean like 2 to 3 units, he'll be dead in turn one.
Yeah, and for everyone,
because
just kind of chime,
get his ward save.
Yeah, for everyone chiming in, what we're talking about here now is, as we compare Phoenix Guard and Hearthguard Berserkers, we're talking about Drakfoot, and Gary brought that up, and that's an excellent point. We talked about it in last week's show, so if you want to listen to that, go back and listen to that. But what we're referring to is something called Strength of Purpose that Drakfoot is now going to be getting. And that's specifically the Bone Splitters, right, Steve? Right? Bone Splitters.
Yes.
And basically, the Ethereal ability has no effect on attacks made by Drakfoot unit. In addition, any ability that negates wounds has no effect on wounds inflicted by Drakfoot unit. So that means ward save and Ethereal are out the window with these guys. And we haven't quite come to the determination of why that is or how they get that. I don't know if it's a war paint. I don't know if it's something else, but they get something in their army build that allows them to walk past Ethereal and ward saves. So,
well, the whole premise, I think, behind that tribe is that they are, that tribe is like, they're ghost hunters, essentially. They fight spirits.
Okay.
That's, I guess, what that's at least some of the rumors I've been hearing, that they're like an anti-ghost tribe.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with whatever their burning tattoos are, or whatever they call them, you know, something to that effect. But yeah, Gary, you're absolutely right. Drakfoot is going to be the new unit.
But now hold on one sec there, because Gary brought up a very good point, and I just want to elaborate a little bit more on it.
All right, I'm shutting up.
Gary, when you said that, yes, that Drakfoot's going to be trouble, it will be. But you have to remember something, and it's something I said last week, and you well know this being a 40K player. Orc players are orc players.
That's right.
You are not going to see a gigantic swath of savage orc players joining the fray. It's not going to happen because they're a very boring army. It's just a bunch of orc cavemen. And now will there be people that will play it just for that rule? Of course there will be. But you're not going to see people abandon Slaanesh or Chaos or Gloomspite or name an army to go play an obscure army that has an ability that only affects a handful of units in the game. Because there aren't a whole lot of units in the game that have an aftersave. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, that's not true. There's death. We're talking a 6-up. I'm talking like armies that have like a 4-up save or a 5-up ward save. And there's only a handful. I can think of a few just off the top of my head. My trolls have a 5-up. Nurgle has a 5-up. Phoenix Guard have a 4+. Hearthguard Berserkers have a 4+.
Yeah.
I can't think of too many other units that get that ability. If they're, and I'm sure they're out there. I don't know of very many more that have a 5 or a 4+ ward save.
Yeah, and you know, so, and there's a couple of crazy builds you can do as well.
Yeah.
You know, like any army, to give yourself these different, and Nurgle's kind of the king of that. You can kind of take different chaos units and put, drop them in a, sure, Nurgle unit, and they get these crazy 5+ after saves and blah blah blah. But for the most part, what, you know, Gary, what Steve is saying is absolutely right. You're not going to see a lot of it, simply mainly because they're freaking bone splitters.
Yeah. Okay. And they're not, and they were not a popular army, even when Cunning Ruck was the game breaker. You didn't see a whole influx of Cunning Ruck players. I think at Adepticon 2017 or 2018,
there was
one person that was playing them.
Yeah, well, one that was full Cunning Ruck, the other one had like some kind of a hodgepodge, but you're absolutely
exactly
right.
So you're talking two people out of like 200 guys that are at a tournament. So.
Yeah.
If I were you, Gary, I would not be even remotely concerned about these new orcs having that ability.
Well, I still have to buy an army.
Well, I may be able to help you with that.
Okay, we'll see.
Well, are you gonna stick with? Are you considering the orc war clans there, Gary? Or are you gonna stick with the Fire Slayers?
Fire Slayers is a choice I made a while ago, but then again, you know, Games Workshop keeps throwing out the new shiny every couple of months.
Yeah, well, you know, in all fairness to the conversation, I kind of picture you as a half-nude midget. Really?
Oh my God, stop picturing me as anything.
Please. Yes, please. Can we get that imagery burned out of our heads right
Dave,
now?
Dave, did you hear that?
I didn't want to. No, thank you.
Dave, what are your thoughts on this thing, man? We kind of took a left turn in Albuquerque in the conversation here. But what do you think about, you know, the Hearthguard Berserkers versus the Phoenix Guard?
I think the Hearthguard would have more punch.
Yeah.
But if you put some magic with the Phoenix Guard, they could do some damage.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what the consensus we came to, right? I mean, with the Phoenix Guard without support would definitely lose that war of attrition against the Hearthguard Berserkers. But but then again, you could probably bring in support for the Berserkers, and you know, who the heck knows?
Yeah,
what
I mean, it would
there
just
too.
Be it would just be, you know, 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. You're not. It's just going to be one big push on both sides with all their buffs and everything else.
But it'd be a heck of a fight to see, man. Absolutely.
Oh, it would be a monumental fight because the Phoenix Guard aren't going anywhere until I kill the last man, and that's where you have a slight advantage.
Well, on an objective-based game, that could.
Yeah,
that could
I'm not be. Busting through you until I get you completely out of the way.
Yeah.
And now, mind you, you're going to have 3 units of those Phoenix Guard, not just one.
Right. Right, and then you don't know what kind of condition your Hearthguard Berserkers are going to be in by the
Absolutely.
Time they break through those Phoenix Guards.
So, like I said, when we just do a side-by-side comparison, I think the Hearthguard Berserkers clearly win.
Yeah.
But when you put that in the context of a 2,000-point army, and you add in all the buffs and all the other little goodies that the armies both armies have, yeah, it's going to change, definitely going to change the way things end up turning out, as we well know.
Right. Yeah. Well, good deal. So I think that's a consensus, right? You know, a mano, it's going to be the Hearthguard Berserkers, right?
I would give the slight advantage to the Hearthguard Berserkers
At least for now. We'll see what happens. We'll see what kind of buffs that the Phoenix Guard get in addition to their normal War Scroll rules.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you know, I'm really excited for the Cities of Sigmar book. I'm really excited, you know, and you know, not to keep talking about the fantasy stuff. I'm actually been reinvigorated too, and this is for another show here, Gary. But I do want to maybe the next show. I want to really start talking about the Adeptus Mechanicus. Some Imperial Knight combos I've been working on. So maybe next show we're gonna dive in on that one. Yeah.
Yep, we can absolutely do that. I have no issue. As a matter of fact, on Tuesdays, I know I fell behind on that, and I apologize to our fan base, all four of them, for doing that.
That's right. And two of them are blind.
Right. Well, the four of us are here. So Dave just got included. It was three, now it's four. So on Tuesdays, I'll either be putting up battle reports, which is the goal, or doing a Tactical Tuesday to where I actually show things like this on the table. And right now it'll be for like Tau, G-Circle, things like that. So
yeah.
But we'll go through and do that. What I think would actually be a really good idea is for us to talk about it on a Thursday. Maybe then I show it on Tuesday.
There you go. I like it. And I think we should start moving that direction on both sides of the house for sure. And
sure.
start putting that out there.
Fully painted knights and we'll be good.
Done. All right. Good deal.
Okay. No, I mean
this. Good deal. Dave, you're going to be painting some of my knights. I'm kidding.
No, I'll do it. I don't care.
There you go. Well, listen, Steve, good stuff, man. Anything to wrap up your Phoenix Guard versus Berserkers?
No, I just want to say that real quick that I'm really looking forward to seeing the revival of the Phoenix Guard back on tables again. I think it's going to be phenomenal.
You know what? It's funny because it was 4.5 years. You know, 4.5 years ago, I put my Phoenix Guard away and never. And honestly, I've sold every stick of elf that I had except for them. And you know what's funny, and this is a true story, and then we're gonna get into the question of the day here, but I had that army for sale, and Steve, you can back me up on this. I had that army for sale for 2.5 years. I literally had the thing on Facebook, I had it on Marketplace, I had it on eBay. Yeah. And I was selling it for between 400 and 500, you know.
Which
I had 500
fire sale.
Yeah. And I was selling a massive army, and not a damn person decided they want anything to do with it. Well, I thought they were a goner. I thought they were going to go the way of the dinosaur with the rest of the elf army, high elves. And sure enough, when I heard about the Cities of Sigmar, they were going to be brought in and kind of their new lore. No kidding. In 3 days, when I decided, you know, I'm going to keep the army. I'm going to, you know, play it a little bit. And I got 57 requests to buy the army.
Well, you know, that brings up something that you talked about earlier, and I don't mean to drag on here, but you know, you said, you know, that Phoenix Guard were so tough even back in the early days of AOS, but nobody was playing them. Well, there's a reason for that. A lot of people thought they were going to be squatted with the rest of the older armies, and
right.
That's why no one ever bought into them.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 37, not 57, 37.
Yeah,
I just looked at it again.
Now that they're now that they're getting these new rules and they're just as phenomenal as they ever were, now you're going to see all these people buying into them because now they have a book. Now they're safe.
Yeah.
At least for another 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. I think GW came out with a statement and said that their books were going to be about a 4-year stand now. You know,
yeah.
And that's all the
so
white spine books for AOS. So, yeah, you're looking at another 4 years and you're going to see these guys on the tabletop. So, yeah, good stuff, man. Good stuff. Well, you know, we're gonna keep rolling here. So actually, you know, as a sidebar, Dave, you said you're gonna get playing again. What's gonna be your fantasy army? What's gonna be your 40K army, real quick?
I've got Astral Claws.
Okay, you said that before. Yeah, Astral Claws are gonna be your 40K army. What about your fantasy army?
My trolls.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
See, Dave has class. He doesn't play trash like Nobblers.
It's all hey, you son of a. You know what?
That's right.
All right. So let's get to the Dave. We're going to get to the question of the day. So, are Gary and Steve a couple of ignorant jag? I'm kidding. All right, no. Here it is. Here's the question of the day. We've come to the point in Grimdark Live here. We got the question of the day. So, here it is. And you know, I got to tell you, I think because of the conversation here, I'm going to throw this out to Gary first. Here it is. Gary, in either Age of Sigmar or 40K. In either Age of Sigmar or 40K, are armies with the after save, you know, ward save in Age of Sigmar or feel no pain in 40K, a must-have in this game?
No.
Okay.
So,
can you embellish on that a little bit?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
The you have a couple of 40K that do well, i.e. Nurgle and Tau with their drones. But if you don't have that, you might be able to make up for, because you pay fatten points. If you have a after save, I like that, by the way, after save, because it covers all of it.
Right.
You're paying for that. There's a point value associated with it. So if you take models that don't have that, you might be able to make up for it in numbers.
Okay. But all right. Interesting.
Has a quality all of its own. Mm-hmm. I.e., you've got 60 plague bearers that have a 5-up save and a 5-up after save. Right?
Yeah.
So you have to do 3 to 4 wounds to kill off one. But that costs you 10 points. To whereas a Termagant costs me 4. So I get 2.5 models to every one of yours.
Sure.
So if you do the math, to kill off those 2.5, you're going to need to do probably 3 to 4 wounds because of saves and so forth and so on. And you need to do the same thing to the one model. I just think it makes it easier. And having the second save gives you that second layer of defense to go through it. But I don't think it's an absolute necessity. I think it is very good to base your army off of, because you're always going to be in it. And in 40K, a lot of the times, the items with an after save don't have that much offensive output.
All right. So. Good one. Dave, same question back to you. In either Age of Sigmar or 40K, are armies with an after save, you know, the ward save in AOS or the feel no pain in 40K, are they a must-have in the game?
No. Look at Space Marines now. Because I think, especially, well, Iron Hands are an exception.
Right. They get a 6-up. So.
Right. But, like, if you play Ultramarines, you get, I've seen people get table turn 2 or turn 3 with just over the amount of firepower and AP.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Numbers.
Another thing on there to piggyback off what Dave's saying with Marines. Yes, Iron Hands are the bugbear. The Leviathan Dreadnought, you're not going to kill it, but it doesn't do that much. And they have to stay in this little bitty bubble the entire time to get all those benefits. So you have other advantages over that.
Yeah.
Like, now they really can't go spread out through the table. So kill off all the infantry in the first 2 turns. They're not going to hold any objectives other than the one they're on. So the advantage, yes, they're durable. Disadvantage, they're going to be in one area.
Yeah, I got you. Well, that's a good point, Dave, and Gary, good point. All right, Steve, here it is, man. Same question. In either Age of Sigmar or 40K, are armies with the after save, ward save, or feel no pain, are they a must-have in the game?
I'm obviously speaking from the fantasy point of view, but not yet. But I think the time is coming where it is almost going to be necessary.
Right.
Yeah, I can speak. It's almost going to be necessary in the near future, at least to have one elite unit that has a feel no pain, because what we're finding nowadays is that the armies are getting rougher every book.
Yeah.
And it's not getting any better. It's getting worse. So I think it's not a must, an absolute must right now, but it's getting real close for fantasy.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I got to tell you, the more I learn about 40K, I'm split right down the middle with this question. You know, the more I learn about 40K and I'm learning quite a bit, I would say that, you know, is an army with a feel no pain a must have? I'm going to say no, because for one reason that pops into mind, and that's because damage doesn't carry over in 40K like it does in fantasy. So yeah. The need for that safety net or that after save that you need in fantasy, because, you know, for instance, you know, I take my Bulgors in my Beast of Chaos army, you know, they have a -2 damage 3 profile with their great weapon. And if they come up and they hit, you know, a unit of
trolls,
you know, they have the opportunity with a good pile-in to, you know, they can do as much as, you know, 9 to 12 damage that
you
can't.
Well, look what you did last weekend, Pat.
Yeah.
You came up with a unit of Minotaurs, and you did, what was it, 15 wounds?
15 wounds, yeah. Yeah.
15 wounds, and the trolls were able to save, what, 9 of them?
Yeah, because they have a, yeah, because they have that aftersave.
Because of the aftersave.
But, in,
so
you know,
in that case,
yeah.
In that case, it absolutely is necessary.
Yeah.
Especially when you're playing a low model count army, you know, or an army of monstrous infantry, kind
right.
of like I play.
It's a low model count.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think in fantasy it's becoming that way, because you're absolutely right in what you said was the armies, and I don't see this in 40K. I mean, I see certain things in 40K where you have certain units or certain builds that make the army stand out, but you're absolutely right. In fantasy, it seems like with every book, there's something that is just it's literally the army to beat. You know, back in the day when Daughters of Cain came out and all the and such and so forth, you know, Idnithipkin, you know, they had all of these certain things that made the entire army brutal. So yeah, my answer to that is kind of half and half. I wouldn't say that it's needed in 40K yet, mainly because the damage doesn't carry over. But in fantasy, it's getting more and more to where,
yeah,
if you don't have a ward save, I'm not really quite sure that you should be playing that army unless you're just doing it for, you know, fluff and fun.
Yeah. Totally
so.
Agree.
Well, good stuff. Well, that's our that's the question of the day. Now we're starting to wind the show real down, ratcheting it down here, and we got the closing thoughts here with Gary Frank. The man's finally back. So Gary, close it out for us, man. Closing thoughts.
Finally back. It was 1 week.
Well, we were worried about you, man. You know, you don't know what you do emotionally to people like Steve and to Randy. They were very scared, you know, especially, I don't know how, you know, you're just lucky that your doctor, you know, he was able to, you know, shift with his left hand.
My doctor, remember, it was referred from you. So,
well,
it speaks all kinds of weird things about you.
He's Steve's roommate. I don't know.
I just got through it all by plucking the arms off of Nobblers.
Yeah, well,
you know what, sons of bitches. All right, so closing thoughts here, man.
So what I want to do on this, and this is something that the crew here, Grimdark Live, can understand. Many of us that seek to do something outside of work and in normal everyday, we think about it all the time. Oh, I want to do this. I want to do that. Or, hey, this is a good idea. Thoughts mean nothing without action. You can have the best ideas in the world, the best things for you to do, and all of these that you want to do that make you feel good, and not do them because of fear or opinion, what you're afraid of, what other people will think of those kind of things. And I want to try and stress to people, and you don't have to listen if you don't want to. I'm fine. I get that. This is just something that I've learned throughout the things that I go through. Don't wait to act on things that you think about constantly. If you're thinking about something over and over and over again, there's a reason. It's because you want to go do those things. So don't put them away in a shelf somewhere because you're worried about what other people will think. And the reason why people don't act on things is because they're afraid of failure, of it not working. Well, you're going to fail, but that's how you learn. It's through failing. Nobody ever was perfect the first time they did something. It takes work. So I guess the thought of the day to go through that, we're going to grow as we're doing. How many breakfasts and stuff have we had, Steve, Pat?
Three.
Right. And yeah. Then we've talked about doing the exact things that we're doing now a year ago.
Right.
We just spun our wheel, but we never stopped.
It starts with a dream.
Talking about it. Right. But if it's only a dream, it's only going to happen when you're asleep.
I like that one, man. I'm writing that one down.
You have to make that happen whenever you wake up, too. So I guess the answer to all this is actions always prove why words mean nothing. Say that again so everybody can understand that and really take it in. Actions always prove why words mean nothing. Don't talk me to death. Do it. It's like I tell my son, I said, hey, I don't care. Don't talk to me about the test because the results of it's going to tell me what actions you took for it. It's not what you think. It's what you do that matters.
Well said.
So, yeah. And people will remember you more for what you did instead of what you said. So.
That's so great, man.
Go do it.
Good thought, Gary.
Yeah. I love it, man. Yeah, it's quickly becoming my favorite part of the show, honestly, buddy. That's good stuff there, dude. Well, Dave, what did you think, man? Did you have a good time tonight?
Oh, every week.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for being on our show, man. Honestly, we're proud to have you as a Grimdark Goon, honestly.
I'd love to come back.
Well, you're always welcome, man. Honestly, you're always welcome. And that, guys, is another great show.
Grimdark Live, I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar and 40K worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short lance. And if you missed a live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim. All you dice chucking goose sniffing game of goons, you're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms. Bye.